Son, my place is here. My future is here. It is time for you to let go.
I don't want things to change.
But you can't stop the change any more than you can stop the suns from setting.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 256, Can't Stop the Change. The Wampa's Lair podcast is brought to you by Topps and the Star Wars Card Trader app. Collect and trade cards from 1977 to The Last Jedi. The entire Star Wars galaxy is in the palm of your hand. Download free now in the App Store or on Google Play. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the director critic to my General Hux, we have Carl Eclair.
I'm a mastermind.
And you will bow down to the First Order!
I've been wanting to watch Rogue One for so long now, and I just have not had the time. I gotta get on it, because I know I want to do a rewatch before Last Jedi comes out in just under 5 weeks. I think it's like just over 4 weeks away. It's crazy.
I think. Oh my gosh. Actually, yeah. It'll be a month.
Yeah. Nuts. Yeah, actually, yeah. Wednesday will be a month because I'm doing a presentation at work about Star Wars and spirituality again. And I purposely timed it to be 1 month before the premiere.
See? There you go. Carl's a genius. Oh, or at least a geek.
So we are going to be talking this episode about all of the changes post-Disney, which just at the end of October, October 30th, was the five-year anniversary of the acquisition of Lucasfilm by Disney. And obviously there's been a lot of changes, a lot of news that I just recently dropped last week. And we're going to weigh in on a little bit of all of that stuff about what's going on, why change can be a good thing, but also some of the pitfalls of change. but before we get into all of that, Jason, we did have a really fun matchup that was a bit one-sided from last week, where we put Ben Kenobi, old Ben, against Ahsoka S. Fulcrum from Rebels. And what say the Larians?
Well, they say quite a bit. On Facebook, Cody Murphy says it has to be Ben. Both great in their own right, barring some developments in Rebels, Ben achieved Force Ghostum, and that has to be the peak of being a Jedi. Dave Laidlaw says Kenobi. Burdari MacArthur says Kenobi. Greg Cass, Kenobi, no contest. He despises Kenobi, so I'm surprised that he picked old Ben. Just kidding, Greg. Brian Bailey says he's going to go with Ahsoka because she has a second saber, which makes her unique, makes her strong. A second blade would be too much for Kenobi at this stage. Kyle Taylor says Kenobi, stronger with the Force. Dawood Kulak, I'm probably mispronouncing that, sorry, gives it to old Ben. Ian Statsny gives it to Kenobi and hates us both for making him choose. Adam J. Taylor says Kenobi, although there it's written in all caps, so I'm pretty much sure he wants me to do Kenobi as my best sampler impression as possible. Neil Lowry gives it to Ahsoka just by a whisker. I think you mean Montrell, Neil. that's her head thing. Anyway, Jeffrey Beaumont gives it to Ben, a wise old Ben. Thomas Davis gives it a draw. Randy Giles gives it to Obi-Wan on this. Dave Broadway gives it to Fulcrum. Sorry about Obi-Wan, but look at the fight she had with Vader in Rebels. Compare that to the fight Obi-Wan had with Vader in A New Hope. I suspect Vader was using all his abilities against Ahsoka and didn't need to with Obi-Wan. This is my reasoning for the different skill set we see Vader performing in Rebels to A New Hope. Jessica Baker, as much as I want to say Ahsoka, I know good old Ben would best her. Patrick Kotev gives it to Obi-Wan, although he is very happy to see two Jedi fighting each other. Jeffrey Fishbach gives it to Kenobi. William Wolson simply posted a GIF or GIF, however you want to pronounce that, of the twin sons duel between Ben and Maul. Hunter Grigger gives it to Obi-Wan. Cameron Simmons, Ben Kenobi. On Twitter, @Schmidt_Jim says, for the matchup, I have to give it to Kenobi. Even if Ahsoka cuts him down, he will return as a force spirit and wreck her. And then finally, we got an email from our buddy Patrick who says, for the matchup, Obi-Wan will have another happy victory. Instead of happy landing. Clever, Patrick. He fought with Ahsoka during the Clone Wars and probably knows her technique. Also, his need to protect the Chosen One, quote unquote, will give him the edge. So that gives us a final Larian tally of 18 for Ben Kenobi, 3 for the Fulcrum Ahsoka, and 1 tie. What say you, Carl?
I'm going to give it to Lobot.
Of course you are.
Holdover from last episode. No, I definitely think it's Kenobi. When I was thinking of this, just because I wanted to do a fun Kenobi matchup, since we did, you know, all of our Obi-Wan moments last week's episode, I really wanted to get him in a matchup, and I was like, "Ooh, that'd be fun!" Like putting him against like Ahsoka from Rebels. But then after I came up with it and we posted it, I was like, "Well, I don't know. I feel like Kenobi would win pretty easily." And while Ahsoka is certainly impressive, and I get what people are saying about like, you know, the fight between her and Vader in Rebels, the season 2 finale, is phenomenal. However, you also have to remember that when they shot A New Hope, it was 1977. It was totally new. They didn't really have a concept of what lightsaber fighting looked like. And also, it's animation. It's easier to make it look more exciting and fast-paced. So I think just those styles make it differently. And I also feel like Vader and Obi-Wan aren't really going at it on the Death Star. I think they're just feeling each other out the whole time.
Yeah.
I don't think, I don't know. I don't see it as... They're both like giving it their all. And as evidenced by the fact of what we see Vader capable of in that fight with Ahsoka and in Rogue One, and what we see Obi-Wan capable of doing by defeating Maul in 3 swipes, you know, like they're both very powerful, but I think they're really testing each other out at that point of A New Hope. And while Ahsoka is certainly powerful and she's probably the only person in the galaxy besides maybe Kenobi, who could actually cause some damage to Vader at this point in the story. I just think Obi-Wan's just so much more centered in the Force, which makes him the master, which is evidenced in the Twin Sons episode. So it could be a good fight, but I think Kenobi definitely comes out on top.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it to Kenobi on this one. I think it would be a great fight. I think it would be a close fight, but Obi-Wan has the edge. He's more experienced. He helped train Ahsoka, so he knows her technique, even if she has continued to develop in her time away from the temple. So has Obi-Wan. And I'm going to agree with you in the A New Hope duel with between Obi-Wan and Vader. There's a lot more. I think, you know, we saw Obi-Wan's, you know, mental state when he duels in Twin Sons, how he's sort of dueling in his head ahead of time. And I get the feeling that since Obi-Wan and Anakin, old Ben and Vader, know each other so well, they're already predicting each other's moves. And so they're trying to do something and trying, you know, to throw the other off balance. And I think, you know, half of that duel is mental. And I don't think I would be giving it to Obi-Wan if we hadn't had the Twin Sons duel, because the Twin Sons duel gives us Obi-Wan's complete dual mentality. It's economy of movement, predictive, fight planning, you know, fight dueling. And I think he's just more centered and more able to adapt. While Ahsoka would definitely put up a good fight, she's definitely more flashy than Obi-Wan. I think Kenobi's got this one in the bag. So that gives us a final tally of 20 for old Ben, 3 for Fulcrum Ahsoka, and 1 tie. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of expected it to go that way, I guess.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Oh, Carl, I forgot to show you something I got.
Always good to show someone something when it's an audio podcast, Jason.
Right, I know.
Oh, that's so cool. Where'd you get that?
It's a GameStop exclusive Snoke with Throne 6-inch Black Series figure. It looks awesome.
That does look awesome. I'm really excited to see Snoke in Last Jedi.
Me too.
Like in the flesh.
I know, in the flesh, in the digital flesh. Because he's not.
Right, that's true. Yes. That motion capture stuff, it looks phenomenal.
It does. It looks great. And then I also picked up Legends of Luke Skywalker.
I really want to read that.
And I started reading it. And the first story is pretty funny. So,
yeah, Greg just let me borrow From a Certain Point of View, which I've heard amazing things about, the collection of 40 short stories from A New Hope.
Yes.
I've read the first two. The first one was amazing. It picks up immediately after Rogue One ends, which is really cool.
Oh, nice. So yeah, I have From a Certain Point of View. I just haven't opened it yet. But I got home with Legends of Luke Skywalker last night, and I was like, I have to read this. And I just sat down and started reading it immediately. So
yeah, I want to read that next. I've heard people talking about, you know, I wonder what is actually factual in here. Well, apparently, too, like some of the stories are just stories about what we saw in the films, right? But they're like kind of these big dramatic retellings of it.
The first one is sort of poking fun at fandom slightly, in a way that as we debate the differences between the different versions of the movies, you know, from the original theatrical release all the way through the Blu-ray, as this character is trying to piece together the real story of Luke Skywalker, because she doesn't believe all of this stuff. She's like, no, this is a con. This is all a con. And she's telling this at a bar, the real story of Luke Skywalker. And he's in the bar listening to it, fascinated. So it's quite entertaining and over the top. And I love it. So that the first story was quite good. So
that's exciting.
There's a little bit of a tease for people who want to check out that book. And I highly recommend it so far.
Yeah, I can't wait to check it out. I remember the only thing being disappointed that it was like, again, like a middle grade book. But I mean, Guardians of the Wills was fine. I don't see a tremendous difference between the middle age or the middle grade and the YA. It's just really just the content of pages, really. Like the writing isn't that much simpler.
Well, this one I think fits more as a YA style book. I think it is middle grade in the subject matter and maybe some of the writing style, but it's 400 pages long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's quite thick, but the pages are quick, you know, reads. They're quick reads, and it's a little bit larger print. So
sure.
It's, but yeah, it is a little over 400 pages, so
yeah.
It's quite That's a hefty really cool. book.
Yeah, you know, so they've gotten very creative with some of the literature lately, mm-hmm. which I appreciate. You know, so obviously, I mean, it coincides with what we're going to be talking about this episode, but the idea of changes in Star Wars, I think this is a notable change is that of the, you know, the expanded content. You know, I mean, the old EU essentially just charted the story of the big three and then their offspring and their exploits, right? Everything was always kind of these big epic stories over and over and over again. Whereas now we are getting at least like different sorts of content, you know, and different writing styles, which is just kind of neat. You know, I mean, so iJedi from the old, you know, Legends canon, which is the story of Corran Horn during, and it takes place during much of the Jedi Academy trilogy and told mm-hmm. in the first person, was for the longest time the only Star Wars story told in the first person until Heir to the Jedi, which is the Luke Skywalker story. Now, granted, right. in my opinion, that book was a complete failure, and I've yet to hear anybody really praise that book. I don't know the wider consensus, but I know like at least some of our colleagues in the Star Wars Report who do a lot of the book stuff were very unimpressed with it. I mean, I know I quit halfway through. I just thought it was so bad. But I at least appreciate the notion of going at it from this first person lens. It was just, you know, again, just something different.
Right. Yeah. And you're right in saying that there's a lot of more creative approaches taken to the books and stuff, which I appreciate. And I think they're making books for a wider, you know, audience as well, as in, you know, more for kids, more for the adults, you know, that sort of thing. They're broadening the readership of Star Wars. And I think while some of us are a little like, why does Star Wars have to be in the YA genre too? There's a whole section of people who don't read anything except YA. I know people who only read YA books because they love the style and that sort of thing. So they wouldn't pick up a novel. They wouldn't pick up Bloodline, you know?
Sure.
So that's good. I think that's a good change that's been made to Star Wars to sort of dip our toe into the topic here. So,
yeah, you know, so it's just crazy to think that it's already been 5 years.
Yeah.
Since Disney bought Lucasfilm, which also is interesting considering the life of our podcast, which is just over 6 years. So we'd only been podcasting for just over a year when this news hit.
Right.
And, you know, again, at the end of the day, I would still say I could easily see us podcasting for six straight years without getting any new content. I think there's plenty there. But it certainly makes everything easier.
Definitely.
That's for sure.
Definitely.
But you know, again, it was this historic day, October 30th, 2012, when Disney bought Lucasfilm for $4.4 billion.
$4.04 billion. Okay. Why the 04? I'm not sure, but yes, just over 4 billion.
Yeah. And you know, I was watching some of those early, video clips with George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy. And George was talking a lot about why he, you know, made this decision, why he wanted to pass Star Wars along. And he, you know, is simply acknowledging the fact that he's going to be gone someday. He's not going to be around forever. And he wants Star Wars to continue to have a life after him. And he was talking about how when he first released A New Hope back in 77, a lot of critics were saying, oh, this seems like a movie Disney would have put out. And George spoke very fondly of Disney in those early days and how he just saw them as the right property to take it on because they had so many resources. They knew how to make things successful. And he just saw Disney as the right place for Star Wars to continue to have life. And I think that's the why, right? That's why he chose. He didn't sell it because he wanted the money. That's
right.
He didn't need it. That's for darn sure.
No,
and he donated. He
and of course, he donated most of it.
The majority of it, yeah, to some education thing. So
education stuff.
Yeah. So, like, you know, it wasn't for the sake of selling it. And I still get annoyed when people say, like, oh, the prequels, he just did that scene so he could sell more toys. That's so not true. Like, that's not George Lucas at all.
No. I mean, granted, I'm glad that he did it so that I could have the toys of the movies. But no, that's not – there's George Lucas sells toys to sell the movie. He doesn't sell the movie to sell toys.
Right, right. In one of those interviews, too, it was the very first one. It's and Kathleen Kennedy talks about how, you know, she recognizes that George is the creator and the master of this universe. And moving forward with Disney, right, they would in some way always keep George around in a sense of, you know, whether, you know, she refers to him in the interview as he would be the Yoda on her shoulder. You know, who would, you know, give advice. And, you know, we heard a lot of that news early on about how George would, you know, that Disney planned to check in on him, basically just to always make sure the rules were right, right? Like, you know, can we do this? Is this a possible power for Luke? Or, you know, things like that. George was going to be left in the loop. But that's very clearly not the case. That didn't happen at all. You know, I think...
I'm not... I'm going to push back on that one just a little bit because you got Dave Filoni there, and Dave Filoni is basically George Lucas reincarnated to some extent. And
but he's not George Lucas. That's a big difference. Just
right. Because he's not George Lucas.
Just because he's
as close
trained.
To George Lucas as we're going to get.
Sure. Though. But he's not George Lucas. So all I want to say is like, and I'm not trying to like be a jerk, but like, you know, and who knows why that didn't happen. we don't know all the behind the scenes, but it didn't happen. You know, Kathleen Kennedy made kind of an empty promise that George would still in some way be in the picture. And I guess the biggest thing we saw him do since Disney's taken over is obviously he did go to the set of Rogue One. Doubtful that he made any sort of story suggestions.
No, and he's not going to. He I don't think, other than sort of, you know, getting the ball rolling on the new trilogy, I don't think he ever was going to be involved with the stories really moving forward, other than just rules of the universe. And I think I think he is still very much in the minds of all the people working there as sort of the, you know, the angel on the shoulder, the Yoda on the shoulder sort of thing,
right.
Without being directly involved. And who knows how many times a week, month, Kathleen Kennedy calls him up, you know. I'm sure he's on her speed dial because they've been friends forever.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to publicly, he's not really heavily involved at all, which granted. And of course, part of that's probably his decision hey, I really like retirement. I don't need to be involved. But they keep bringing him back. You know, he visited the set of Rogue One. He was integral to the 40th anniversary panel at Celebration. This past year, you know, that was a big deal that they got him back to do all that. And he was definitely, you know, very present at this past Celebration. So it's not like they're shuffling him off and hiding him in a closet somewhere. So.
No, yeah, that's for sure. I just, you know, the counterpoint, though, is obviously then, I don't know if it was a year later, or maybe a little over a year later, when he had that interview with Charlie Rose. Right. And he refers to Disney as white slavers. And he talks about, I mean, his opinion has changed almost into a 180. His analogy of it being a breakup is felt very clearly in that particular interview. The fact that he himself is probably mourning the loss of Star Wars. I mean, he often in interviews throughout the Star Wars history referred to the Star Wars films as his children. And the amount of investment he made in them, and, you know, both financially as well as personally and probably emotionally. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when Disney bought stuff and they bought his story treatments and then threw them out, I think he was very slighted by that.
I mean, we don't know. We have no idea the extent of his story treatments and how much they're still guiding, you know, the story or the themes of the new saga, you know, the new trilogy, excuse me. So, you know, because nobody's seen them,
sure.
Really, right. You know, so we have no idea. And from what we've heard, his treatments were kind of a rough outline anyways.
Right.
So, which sounds George Lucas, you know, he probably turned them in, you know, having written them on a legal pad with a number two pencil.
Which is adorable. I love it.
And I think, you know, he had that interview with Charlie Rose, and I think he's, you know, come around to Star Wars since then, the new stuff since then, because, I mean, that interview was right when The Force Awakens was coming out, and that's the first of the new movies to come out since he handed over the reins, and of course he's going to feel a little irritated and a little, you know, anxious and emotional, because it's the first one without him, essentially.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of bring up all sorts of, you know, stuff, because it's his baby.
Yeah.
You know, this thing, he fought, he bled, he, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for Star Wars throughout its entirety. And to have it kind of keep going and him just sort of sitting back and watching it happen is, you know, like a parent getting, you know, frustrated when, you know, they see their empty nester go off to college and then move out of state rather than come back to come back to the hometown. So it's like, I'm so happy, but I'm angry too, you know. So
yeah, well, you know, if any of you have read the most recent George Lucas biography, I think it's just called George Lucas: A Life, which is, I think, oh my gosh, blanking on the author. I think it's Brian something. Yeah, find it for me there, Jason. Good luck.
Brian J. Jones.
Brian J. Jones, yeah. Throughout that book, it makes it very clear what a control freak George Lucas is. And again, for better or worse, it's not a judgment. It's just an observation. And George would be very honest to say that as well, right? Like, whenever he's making a film, he needs to be in complete control. So it would make sense that when Force Awakens comes out, something he literally had no control over, he's going to have opinions about it.
Yes.
I just think I'm fairly certain that tension has been relieved in the last year or so. In that early interview with him and Kathleen Kennedy, right after he sold it, he made it very clear that he was looking forward to becoming a fan of Star Wars. I don't know that George Lucas will ever be able to be a fan of Star Wars.
That's an observer, right?
It's a huge difference. Huge
difference. Because he knows it inside and out. He lived it. You know, this is his brainchild. How do you walk away from being the creator of something to being a fan of something? You know, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, authors, they create this novel, this storyline, this series, whatever. How do you then turn around and just read it objectively? Mm. You can't, because you know the guts, you know the disgusting stuff that went into making this beautiful thing. But all you see is those, you know, the stitches in the back and, you know, whatever's propping the thing up. But, you know, that's all you see. And so how do you turn around and be a fan of it? It's really difficult. And I think he's, you know, I think maybe a little bit of distance helps him be a bit more of a fan. And so maybe part of the public, at least, disconnecting is on his end, so he can try and view this as a fan rather than as the creator.
Right.
As the maker.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, one level of pushback I would give to George Lucas if I was his therapist is, if Star Wars is indeed his baby, his children, the challenge then is now that your child has grown up and has moved away, can you become just a fan? Can you be someone who's just there to support it and love it and whatever new incarnation it might make, right? I mean, I know this is a very, like, that's a very big analogy, but I think it could work, right? Like, I think it is possible that George could eventually become a fan and could just support this for what it has grown into.
And I think Rogue One helped with that, because he seemed to really enjoy Rogue One from what we could gather.
Right. I mean, it was a very different type of Star Wars film, whereas Force Awakens was not. You know, I mean, I thoroughly enjoy Force Awakens, but it didn't take any bold moves that Star Wars typically does, either through visual stuff, either through really even storytelling. Like, there are neat things that are new in Force Awakens, but nothing like groundbreaking, nothing like you're used to from a Star Wars film, you know?
Right.
Whereas Rogue One was.
Right. Force Awakens is a little bit of a greatest hits from the original trilogy.
Right.
Not holding that against it, because, you know, that can work. And it definitely did work for a lot of people. I mean, I saw it in the theater 7 times. You know, I paid money 7 times to go see that movie in the theater. It worked for me, and the characters are great. So not holding it against it, but I think from here on out, the new trilogy really has to find its identity and where it's going thematically and story-wise. So,
which I think it will.
I think it will too. All indications are that it is. And Rian Johnson seems to be the creative genius that has really put the fingerprints on this new trilogy. So,
yeah. You know, I think, there's a very clear difference now in Star Wars about the fact that you go from one man who kind of guided everything to now you have a group. Right. You literally have a story group, but you also have, you know, every film has collaborators, right? JJ collaborated a bit with Rian, and now Rian will collaborate a bit with JJ for Episode 9. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I think Star Wars has always been at its best when there has been strong collaboration. There was a ton of collaboration on the original trilogy. There was next to none in the prequel trilogy. And I love the prequels, as you know, but you know, the average person would say that the originals are stronger films. And I think that is due in large part to the sense of collaboration that George had with Gary Kurtz, with Irvin Kershner, Richard Marquand. Gary Kurtz is a big player, though. Gary Kurtz was a great producer, whereas Rick McCallum was just a yes man. He didn't clearly challenge anything. So, which is kind of what George was looking for at that stage.
Right.
Of his career.
Right.
I think he would have been really annoyed by a Gary Kurtz at that point.
But, well, there's a reason why the two of them don't work together anymore.
Right.
So.
But, and, you know, I mean, it's just, it's,
and, very, and even with the Clone Wars, while, you know, Dave Filoni was supervising director, story-wise, everything had to be kind of approved by George. Everything came from George for the most part.
Right.
You know, they had this story team. They had, you know, all the story meetings and the writers meetings. And George was there sort of, you know, overseeing it all and kind of directing it all, which is great if you're, you know, you're getting all these stories straight from the creator of Star Wars itself. But it's still, you know, while there's all this creative talent in the room, everything still has to get through George. Right. And where I think with the story group, there's a bit more of a democratic system. So rather than an oligarchy, if you will.
Right. Right.
And the good thing with the story group is that they can be more influential, since there are more of them and there it is a group, they can be more influential in guiding the content as a whole, and keeping that all straight. Because George didn't really care too much about the content of the books and the games and the comics and that sort of stuff. You know, if he'd kind of get a general idea, and there might have been things he might have vetoed if they started straying into certain areas or dealing with certain characters. But in large part, that was all kind of not much of his concern. Right. Whereas now we have this concentrated effort to keep the themes and, you know, stories across the entire spectrum moving in roughly the same direction. And, you know, you can debate whether that's been successful or not. But they're at least making the effort and doing something that has not really been done in any large measure ever with any other franchise. So,
yeah. Yeah, and but to be fair, the old Legends canon did there was a lot of collaboration there too. There wasn't a single story group, but there was a lot of collaboration. Those novels all built upon each other over time. So that's not new.
No.
If but, anything, it's I find it obnoxious that they have to make everything fit in. And I'm also not a fan of like using cross media to tell stories. Like, I don't like the fact that like, oh, I didn't read the comic series, so now I'm missing this piece of knowledge, or right. Like things like that to me bug me. Cause, I don't really I certainly don't have the money to buy all the comics, cause there's one like every other day. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think that the movies will ever fall dependent upon multimedia to be fair. Like, I don't think they'd ever do that. However, like, you know, and there are certain stories you would read, but you wouldn't know certain backstories or things like that unless you read this particular comic series or, you know, this particular book. Or, you know, like they have an Inferno Squadron novel now before they, you know, Battlefront 2 comes out later this week. And, you know, it's like, oh, if you want to know more, you got to read this book. And it's just like, can we ever just have it, something be its own? Like, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I just see that as simply being run by marketing managers and not by like creative forces. And I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just being a little too harsh, but to me, that's like, how can we make the most money with this? Well, tell it across three different platforms. Sounds great. Well, what kind of story are we going to tell? Well, we'll figure that out later. And I think that's a fair point with some of the screw ups of both Force Awakens and Rogue One in regards to all the reshoots, is I don't think that they had a very clear idea. I think they had, hey, let's do this because it'll be successful. People want it, to be fair. We know it'll still be good, but story came second, is sometimes the impression I'm getting.
I don't know. I'm not going to agree with that fully. I think story with, from what I'm gathering, and we don't really know a lot about the behind the scenes of Rogue One at all.
Sure.
Which is what I'm really curious about. From what I'm seeing and hearing and reading is that they had the story beats and the story, you know, the plot nailed down, but the specifics of how everything got. Gareth Edwards shot the scenes, you know, 15 different ways. And when they got back to the editing room and they started crafting the story together, you know, in the edit, they realized that they needed to go back and reshoot things because they wanted to do things a certain way. And, the story evolved. I don't think it wasn't that they didn't have a good idea of what they wanted the story to be, but the way that they told the story evolved, from what I gather. And half the reshoots were already scheduled anyways.
Sure.
So, and I think that's just kind of the way we can expect things to go. And part of it is, I think half of this is we're just finding out how movies are made because it's Star Wars. You know, and we're all highly invested in that. And the movie making process is ugly. Like, the process of making a movie is never smooth, and it's never, you know, goes according to plan. And the only reason why we care so much is because it's Star Wars. And that's why when things don't look to be going quite right, we always jump to being concerned and worried that everything's going to fail and fall apart. But, you know, I think, you know, movies in general are made by the seat of your pants, you know, I think. So that's just my sense of things. So I could be wrong. But
yeah, no, I'm sure that's the case, that there are always problems on set. That's nothing new. But because right. It's Star Wars, we are paying much more close attention.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, I think, at the end of the day, I am happy that Star Wars has been passed on. I will probably stand by this for years to come, but I wish it wasn't with Disney, and I can say why later. However, I am very pleased that Star Wars has been passed on because I want to see Star Wars continue into the future. I think it can continually become fresh and new and inform new generations. But to me, what's always going to have to remain the same is that it has some sort of mythological story to tell, right? That's what made Star Wars so successful, is that it was a story so big and grand that it could speak to peoples of all cultures, all social classes, all races. You know, it was this big story that had such a huge impact. And I think it's going to always need to do that. And I think it's doing that successfully so far. I'm not saying it's not. I just think that's what it always has to stay true to. And I was having actually had a really neat conversation. I was at a party a few nights ago, and a friend of mine there is a Star Trek fan. And I was asking him if he'd seen Discovery yet, and he still hasn't. And I was telling him how much I love it, and you know, how I find it to be, you know, a little bit more informed by the J.J. Abrams relaunch of the brand, in the sense that it's a little bit quicker and more action packed and a little bit more exciting. He said, you know, I haven't seen it. He goes, I've read a lot of things. And he said, you know, but I think it's really cool that they've changed it up. You know, like there's like an African-American woman is the lead of that show, which, you know, is a powerful inclusion statement. Inclusion is a good thing. And, you know, he was talking about how it, from the sounds of things, it's making it fresh and new. And that's exciting because it can bring more people into that galaxy and into that universe and allow more people to participate. And I think that's extremely important for Star Wars, that, you know, it'll be great that we get stuff that's fresh and new, as long as it has at its core, I think, the idea of telling a story worth telling. Right, like George made this franchise on the sense of this is a generation starving for fairy tales, starving for myth. I'm going to give them that. I think that's where Star Wars. That's the beauty of what Star Wars was created out of. And you know, that's what I think. At the end of the day, it always needs to do, specifically with films. I don't think that needs to be as big of a case with, you know, some of the expanded material. Like, for instance, I will never read the Inferno Squadron book. I never plan on reading Twilight Company because I don't care about troopers. Like, I don't care at all. Right? Like, it's that, I'd rather read a good military history book than read Star Wars fake military. Right? Like, to me, that is a backdrop to something much bigger. That is not my favorite type of Star Wars. Now, I know that there are thousands upon thousands of Star Wars fans who disagree. They love that stuff, and I'm not knocking it. But, like, for instance, if they told us, like, oh, our next Star Wars standalone film is going to be about a company of stormtroopers, I doubt I'll see that movie. Like, I don't care. Like, that's not what I want to see played out. Right.
Well,
and
you'd see the movie.
No, I actually think I wouldn't at this stage in the game. I'm being dead serious. Like, eventually I need to say, because the only way you can say in a business world, I don't like this, is not to give it money. So I'm not going to give them money if they make a story that I don't care about. Like, I know that sounds really harsh, but I'm dead serious. Like, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later about the Rian Johnson trilogy, but if for some reason they're like, oh, it's going to be a Boba Fett trilogy, I will literally boycott that trilogy. I don't want to see that. I don't think that's going to be the case at all.
I doubt it.
Like, I think, you know, even Rogue One, right? They were talking in early pre-production how this is going to be the first Star Wars story without Jedi and all that. Yet, they did a beautifully masterful job of still including the mythology of the Force and in a kind of a more powerful way than almost any of the other films, maybe other than Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Again, like, you can tell a fun action story about soldiers, but if you don't have the Force involved, it's no longer a Star Wars film in a way. I mean, that's obviously what I hold Star Wars up to. And I'm sure there's a lot of people yelling at me right now, like, that's not true. I don't care. I'll see it no matter what. At the end of the day, like, if you're going to give me a movie every year, if it's not something I'm interested in, I'm not going to give you the money. That's my take, on what kind of product they're going to give us. And I honestly, though, right now, I have no reason to fear the product they're going to give us because they've done a fantastic job with both Force Awakens and Rogue One of continuing that story of the myth of Star Wars. And I don't see them shying away from that.
No, I don't either. And one of the big things that Disney has done, not just in the films, but, you know, even in Rebels and across some of the expanded material, the books and stuff, is, and we've touched on it already a little bit, is they've broadened the idea and the mythology of the Force.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what the Force is, who can, you know, tap into it, you know, how important it is to the galaxy at large, you know, that sort of thing, and how many different cultures have different views and different ways they relate to the Force, you know, from the Lasat in Rebels to the Bendu being, you know, some sort of Force being, the one in the middle, to Chirrut and Baze as guardians of the wills. You know, it's made the Force so much bigger than the Jedi and the Sith. The Jedi and the Sith are like the two pillars that hold up this, you know, cornucopia of the Force, if you will. Those are what we base everything off of as fans, as you know, people who watch these movies and, you know, read the material and all this stuff. But they're now going, you thought that was all, but wait, there's more. And they keep pulling back the curtain here and revealing bit by bit more of the Force. And I think we're going to get even more of that in episode 8, in just over a month, with, you know, Snoke and what he's about, because I you know, he's sitting here right next to me, staring at me. It's kind of creepy, but he's not a Sith. Mm-hmm. He's some sort of dark side user, and I don't know, you know, what all that entails. And of course, Luke is on some sort of journey where, you know, at least at one point he has the notion of, you know, it's time for the Jedi to end. But what does that mean? Does that mean he's going to, you know, replace it with something else? You know, we already asked those questions and talked about that on another episode. But I think there's going to be so much, you know, this episode 8 might be your favorite movie with the amount of stuff dealing with the Force that is being hinted at. if they, you know, dive into the Force as deeply as I think they are, The Last Jedi, and they don't, you know, mess up in other ways, The Last Jedi might, I think, Carl, become your favorite Star Wars movie.
It could. I doubt it'll ever, I doubt any movie will ever overtake Empire for me. And to be fair, a lot of that would be because of the nostalgia effect.
True. True.
But I think you're right. I think it definitely could rise up to be a rival to Empire for my favorite. You're definitely right. You know, one thing though, like when reading like the making of Empire Strikes Back stuff by J.W. Rinzler, one thing I really respect though is, again, they really expand the idea of the Force in Empire Strikes Back compared to what we got, you know, that tiny little snippet about it from Obi-Wan in A New Hope.
Right.
They certainly expand upon it a bit more in Empire Strikes Back. And the thing I really like about that, and obviously this is so, I'm speaking as someone who is religious and who has studied religion and appreciates it and its importance in human culture. What I really liked in Empire Strikes Back, though, was a lot of, are you aware of who actually really expanded the notion of the Force for Empire?
I feel like I knew at one point and I've just kind of forgotten. Who is it?
It's Lawrence Kasdan. Okay. I mean, George knew that like he wrote the story that Luke is doing further training, but Lawrence Kasdan really wrote all those scenes and rewrote a lot of the scenes that George had written with Yoda's dialogue about the Force. And Lawrence Kasdan was someone who was very invested in Zen Buddhism. And it's very clear Yoda is a very Zen character. If there's any religion that Empire Strikes Back mirrors, it's Buddhism first and foremost. So I really appreciate that because it was written by a guy who also appreciates and in some way participates in some sort of spiritual tradition. Yes. Something that makes me like a little bit, you know, despondent about is I don't think Rian Johnson, and I could be wrong, and I hope that I am, and I'm not judging him if he's not. Don't get the wrong impression here, but if we're going to have people expanding this stuff, I wish it was people who had some level of investment in that sort of field, if that makes sense. And I know that comes across as a little bit like jerkish, you know, like I don't mean to say that people who aren't religious can't have an insight into spirituality because they certainly can. But I don't know, like, again, like it's just George knew he wanted these stories to reignite people's imaginations for, hold on. I thought I had to sneeze. Reignite people's imaginations for religion. I mean, he's very clear about that. And, you know, I just hope with The Last Jedi that notion is still up there. But, you know, I'm with you though. Like I think I'm gonna love this film because it's gonna be touched on a lot from both sides, which is always interesting because we have no idea what Snoke's, like you said, Snoke's relationship is with the Force. I think it was Mark Hamill that said this in a recent interview, right? Kind of in response to all these people who are like, oh, he's gone dark or he's going to go to the dark side. And he basically, which I love that it was him that did it. He basically said, shut up. Like, that's not what's happening. Because I don't think that's ever going to be the case with Luke. I don't think he'll ever fall to the dark side. But he made the point that his character has started to mistrust himself in making good decisions. And that's why he's where he's at. And I love that. Like, I love that so much.
Yeah. I also love the fact that he's Mark Hamill. Just side note here. I love the fact that Mark Hamill's a complete troll with all the Star Wars theorists out there.
So good.
It's so awesome. I think I brought this up in our panel at Tucson Comic Con, which you'll be hearing next week on the show. And there's, you know, there's all the posters with Luke as the big looming head in the background where everyone's like, oh, the only other person who kind of looms up in the background like that is the dark side character, you know, Vader or something like that on the posters. And so they're surmising that's why he's going to go to the dark side or whatever. And there's also the IMAX, you know, cardboard stand-ups in the theaters where they've got the light side and the dark side and he's on both, you know. And then there was a different version of the main poster that's out now, like from Asia somewhere, and Rey was the big looming head in the back,
right?
And so he posted that and said, now who's turning to the dark side, you know?
Sure.
Yeah,
Sure.
Yeah, so Mark Hamill was like, who's turning the dark side now? And he, you know, just completely trolling all the theorists out there. I love Mark Hamill on social media. Like, if you're not following Mark Hamill on Twitter or Instagram or wherever, you're missing out on a bunch of laughs, because the man knows how to troll better than anybody. So, and it's funny stuff. It's not like, you know, he's putting people down. So,
right. One thing, because I know I've obviously been very harsh this episode, and I'll sum up as to why towards the end. But I do want to say the one thing I want to praise Disney for is the fact that they've been extremely inclusive in their casting. And I know that there are some like very, very odd groups who were like pissed off that Finn was a black stormtrooper, pissed off that two female leads in a row. And, you know, I don't think Disney's doing this to make a political statement. I think they're, again, it's a sign of the times and the importance of, you know, being inclusive. I mean, we live in a world that is much smaller than it was even in 1977, right? Social media and internet access has made our world a lot smaller. Yeah. And I love, if you haven't watched Riz Ahmed talk about this a bit, go check out some of his YouTube clips where he talks about inclusion, and it's really, really powerful stuff. And Diego Luna has said things about, you know, how important it is that, like, I think it's like his nephew or something, like loves looking at the screen and can see himself on that screen, right? Like, that's the importance of inclusion. It's not about a political statement. It's the reality that when somebody from a different culture than our white European culture looks at these films, they can say, hey, I actually do see myself in this. And I think that's important, you know, for the little like Latin American boy running around seeing this movie. It's powerful to see Diego Luna as Cassian. You know, for all the little girls who love Star Wars, it's great to finally have a female lead. So, you know, I think I really praise Disney for making those moves. Again, I don't think to try to be political, but just simply to be more inclusive. And Star Wars is a very inclusive story, whether you like it or not. That's the truth of it. And I would disagree with anybody who says otherwise. And I could prove you wrong, because you would be wrong. I will be very bold in saying that. If you don't think Star Wars is for everybody, you are wrong.
And the great thing about Star Wars is all these characters are for everybody. Whether you're, you know, even if you're an African-American woman, you can identify with Luke Skywalker, just as I can identify with Jyn or Rey or Finn or Cassian, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it's one of those things where the inclusion is kind of both ways. Is, yes, it's great to see all the broadening of, you know, genders and colors on the screen, but it's also, you know, the genders and colors out here in the audience can also go, ah, I don't necessarily have to identify with my white male. I can identify with the you know, green alien over there, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it goes both ways.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great thing too, is Star Wars is big enough that it does have the room to include, you know, all of us on screen. But it's also big enough that the themes are big enough that we don't necessarily have to only identify with who we see ourselves as, you know, color and gender wise. So, you know, that's the great thing about Star Wars.
Yeah.
So
that's a great point, Jason. It's not just about looking up and seeing that, but it's also you being able to say, hey, that doesn't matter. I can identify with everyone. Right.
Exactly.
I think the result of that over time is it makes for a more empathetic culture, right? Like, people have talked about the Harry Potter effect. You know, children that grew up reading Harry Potter tend to be a lot more compassionate and empathetic to all sorts of people. But I think Star Wars did the same thing back in the 70s. You know, so, Jason, before we continue on, I almost am remiss. I want to remind folks again of our sponsor for the last month here down of the show, which is Topps, and just remind them to voyage across the Star Wars galaxy. With Topps and an all-new trading card collection, Topps Journey to Star Wars The Last Jedi, this 110-base storyline cards take you on a journey across the Star Wars saga with a sneak peek at The Last Jedi. You can collect stickers, character cards, illustrated cards, and more. The Last Jedi product includes autographs from over 30 actors and characters. How exciting. Pick up your trading cards by visiting Topps.com today.
So BB-8 autographed a card with his little lighter, and you can get that.
There's a little scorch mark.
Right. Yes. No, I have no idea. I mean, Carl won't ship me any of the cards.
They're for the listeners, Jason.
But I'm a listener. I listen to you as we record.
And I listen to you as I record. There we go. I opened them all.
There we go.
Oh. I'll mail you the doubles.
Okay, good.
But hey, let's talk about that. Let's talk about this new hot topic, though, of the Rian Johnson trilogy and the live action TV show that were both announced just this past week. We're getting a whole new trilogy that is not saga films.
It's not, and it doesn't have anything to do with the Skywalkers. So, and Rian Johnson is the man creating the treatments for this trilogy, the story for this trilogy. And that's about all we know about the trilogy. I think he's officially signed on to write and direct at least the first film of that trilogy.
Yep.
I doubt he will write and direct all three. Just due to the way that they're making these movies and how quickly they have to turn them around. But I'm intrigued. I'm more intrigued at the fact that they got Rian Johnson and not J.J. Abrams to develop the new trilogy, because obviously they're bringing Abrams back to Episode 9. But, you know, what has Rian Johnson done with Episode 8 that has given them the confidence to offer him an entire trilogy to develop?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the big thing. That's the big question. And I'm really curious. So we know it's not going to deal with the Skywalkers. And it's going to be dealing with characters and places that we've not, you know, really dealt with in the saga films thus far. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, the press release on StarWars.com said it would be a group of new characters in a corner of the Star Wars galaxy not yet explored in the lore. So, which is exciting, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean it's nothing we've heard about. It just means it's nothing that's really been explored. And when they say explored in the lore, my guess is they're probably just ignoring Legends. So it could be something that was touched on in Legends, but they're obviously going to take a new take at it. But I think they're just trying to make it very clear. Like, this is not going to be the Skywalker story.
Right.
So what was your initial reaction to when you heard that, Jason?
Well, honestly, I was just surprised. Like, excited because, you know, it's more Star Wars and it's, you know, a whole new idea, a whole new story. We don't necessarily have to continue on with the Skywalkers. We can have, you know, a trilogy. This might be just like a standalone trilogy that deals with a certain conflict or storyline. You know, we may never see these characters return after this trilogy, that sort of thing, you know, on screen, I should say. Because, you know, Lord knows there's going to be books and comics and probably a TV series to go along with it. But that being said, I was honestly kind of just surprised at first. I was happy, yes, but just kind of like, caught me off guard, came out of left field. I had no idea this was coming. And honestly, I'm I'm a little miffed because we got more information about what's coming in the future than the Han Solo movie coming out in 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been very little about that.
I'm like, can we, you know, get a teaser for Solo at least? You know, maybe, you know, some sort of like teaser poster at least, you know, something.
There is an image that's out now, though, of young Han Solo from the movie in his outfit. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. Okay.
Yeah, it's leaked. It's on like a cup. It's like a Disney cup, because then you've got like other Disney characters from like Marvel movies, too. It's something coming out soon. But yeah, you get to see him. He's wearing like a very Empire Strikes Back type Han Solo outfit. It just looks nothing like Harrison Ford. So to me, it's like, nope, this is not a Han Solo movie. This is a kid in space movie. you know, when I saw the announcement, I'll be honest, I was pissed. I was like, this is ridiculous. A trilogy that has nothing to do with the Skywalkers. So literally nothing is sacred in Star Wars anymore, because to me, trilogies were the one last bastion for the Star Wars saga legacy. But now even that can just be thrown out to anybody. So I'll be honest, like I was livid. I was like, this is ridiculous. To be fair, I'm glad it wasn't an announcement of, hey, 10, 11, 12 are going to be starting in, you know, 2020. Like, that would have annoyed me even more. You know, now there's people speculating that Episode 9 might be the last of the Skywalker saga. And moving forward, right, everything in Star Wars will be its own thing. Again, that's obviously all speculation. I hope that the Skywalker saga is, if not done in Episode 9, at least put on hold for at least 5 to 10 years. I've come around. I'm like, okay, this is really cool. Like, it says a lot about Rian Johnson. I also find it a little bizarre that they have to make two big announcements in just a month out from Last Jedi. Like, again, it goes back to my still belief that there is such a thing as too much Star Wars. I think this is case in point, once again, of like, why can't we just be excited for the new movie? Why do you have to give us something new right away, even though this new thing isn't even out yet? Like, to me, it just shows an insecurity. Like, and I'm sure that's not what it is. You know, I talked to my friend. Yeah. My friend Greg was like, he's like, I don't think so at all. He's like, I think it boosts Last Jedi right now in the promotional stage because it shows how much confidence they have. And I see that point. I don't think they'd ever be not confident in themselves, but. And just in a very like surface level way, it's almost like, well, why can't you just be pumping out what you're currently pumping us up for, right? Like, why couldn't they make this announcement in January? Like, why did it have to happen right now? I don't know. It just, you know, it's still rubbing me the wrong way with the idea of too much Star Wars.
I think the reason why this announcement was made now is exactly what Greg was saying, is because Rian Johnson is the one that's going to be developing the story for the trilogy. And if Rian Johnson is developing this new trilogy, he must have done something really good with The Last Jedi, which is what I automatically went to, you know? So definitely going to pump up excitement for The Last Jedi. So, you know, that's the only reason why this announcement was made now.
Sure.
I think.
Sure.
And honestly, though, I would have preferred something from Solo, a Star Wars story.
Sure. You know. The next project, right? That's like 7 months away.
Right. I would love to see something, you know, and I've said this before, Ron Howard is the best thing to happen to that movie because he's at least given us hints.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, communicated with, you know, us fans about what this movie is. But I think from a marketing standpoint, Disney just wants Star Wars to be in the news all the time. Like, I think what they want to do from a marketing standpoint is if there's a news cycle without Star Wars, that's bad, because they just want people to be talking about Star Wars and, you know, that sort of thing all the time, which, you know, can get exhausting, but I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. If everyone else is talking about Star Wars, that means they'll come and listen to us talk about Star Wars, maybe.
Well, they might not like what I have to say then, because I have all sorts of issues with that mentality.
I know.
But I will say I'm really excited about what this trilogy could be. Yes. I'm going to share what my hope is, and then I want to hear what you would like it to be. I mean, I would really like it to be something about the early Jedi. you know, again, something that really captures that mythological aspect of Star Wars. And I just think a great place to go with a story like that is to go far into the past and look at, it doesn't necessarily have to be the formation of the Jedi, but, you know, something about the early Jedi Order, I just think would be a lot of fun. And, you know, when I was talking with Greg about it, you know, he gave a small vote of confidence to that by the fact of he's like, well, look at what the Ryan's obviously doing with Last Jedi, right? Like you said, Jason, you know, they're really expanding upon that part of the Star Wars mythology. So I could see Rian Johnson developing a trilogy of that nature. So that's my big hope. That's what I'm hoping it is. I don't know. What about you? What do you, and again, we have no idea and we probably won't hear any more details for a little while, but, what would you like to see come out of that trilogy?
I don't know what I would like to see because there are so many options, but I think the idea of something dealing with the early formation of the Jedi is probably of those options the most likely at this point, because Luke is at the First Jedi Temple. He's, you know, delving into the history of the Jedi and the lore and that sort of thing. And I think we might have, you know, depending on what The Force Awakens, or not The Force, The Last Jedi gives us in just over a month, we might have a better idea of what Rian has in mind once we see that. I don't think we're going to get Knights of the Old Republic. You know, Knights of the Old Republic is a great game. It's a great franchise within Star Wars. But that's something that's, I think, best left to the games. We're not going to get an adaptation of Knights of the Old Republic. So don't expect that. But I could also see them, you know, going off into the Outer Rim, doing some sort of, you know, trilogy surrounding a hut space or something, I don't know. Some sort of conflict that's not on a galaxy-wide level, but maybe just a region of the galaxy. They could do something like that, although I think that might be a little bit small for a trilogy when you have Star Wars. But I think the most likely at this point is something dealing with the early formation of the Jedi, simply because of what they're giving us in this new trilogy and how involved Rian is in that. So,
right. Yeah. But that's a good point though, about the like unknown regions. I mean, they've hit on that a bit in like the Aftermath trilogy. And then again, in the Thrawn novel, you know, what's out there in wild space, the unknown regions. And that is literally an unknown part of our, our lore. I guess the Yuuzhan Vong come from that, but I don't think you'll see a Yuuzhan Vong movie.
I doubt that very much. And I'm okay with that.
Oh, I am too. I am too.
You know, it was a fascinating series of books, and I'm not necessarily saying fascinating is both good and bad in fascinating. But I'm okay with the Yuuzhan Vong staying in Legends. Personally, I know there are some people that would love to see them come in, but personally, I'm okay with seeing the Yuuzhan Vong stay in Legends. They can live there with their thud bugs and all that fun stuff.
Yeah,
coral skips and right. Anyway.
Yeah,
but there was another news item that kind of came. It was announced almost simultaneously, but kind of slipped under the radar of some people, that the live action TV show that has been talked about, you know, since George Lucas was developing the Clone Wars, is actually finally going to happen. Disney, if you're not aware, is working on their own streaming service that they plan to launch in 2019. And as part of that, they are going to have a Star Wars live action TV show that will be developed for their streaming service. Mm-hmm. And we're actually finally going to get a live action TV show of Star Wars. You know, after all these years, it's going to happen. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's great. And frankly, I wish they'd focus more on just Star Wars TV than movies at this particular time. I I would love it if they just hit the pause on after like the Solo movie came out. Well, obviously it's confirmed now that we have the Rian Johnson trilogy. After the Rian Johnson trilogy is done, I'd love if they could just hit the damn pause button for at least 5 years on a Star Wars movie. And focus a little. I'm fine with like focusing on TV and stuff. Like, I think that's a great new medium to play around with for Star Wars and whatnot. But I don't think that'll ever happen now that Disney owns it. I think it's really exciting that they're going to be launching this new streaming service. And, you know, Bob Iger has come out and publicly said that, like, the service probably it'll be cheaper than Netflix, he's promised. And Netflix is pretty darn cheap, in my opinion. Yeah. So I think that's really exciting. Like I can get on board for it. Even if I'm literally only paying for the Star Wars TV show, I'd pay for it for that. So,
yeah. Well, they're also, I think they're going to be having, you know, all the Star Wars movies, I think are going to be ending up on there, you know? Yep.
Yeah. So, and Clone Wars is going to be pulled off of Netflix and obviously they'll put it there, and I'm sure Rebels will be there. And I'm hoping Aladdin will be there. I love that movie. I haven't seen it in forever. It's a Disney movie.
Right. Yeah, no, and all the Marvel stuff will end up over there and all that fun stuff. So, you know, they're going to – they've taken over the film industry. Now they're like, well, let's take over streaming, you know, but let's rule the streaming universe, you know. So that's – they're going to have their work cut out for them with Netflix, though, and all their original content.
Yeah.
So Stranger Things, pretty good.
Stranger Things is more than pretty good. I want to launch a Stranger Things podcast. I love it so much. I'm really looking forward to whatever that live action TV show might be.
I will say it'll probably be something that's relatively contained. In the case of there will either be, you know, there will be a major set piece that'll serve for like the home base of a lot of the action, whether that's a starship or a cantina of some sort or, you know, something like that, because a Star Wars live action TV show is going to be expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't have a super expensive TV show on a streaming platform, you know, simply because of the income revenue. Although when you're Disney, you can sort of, you know, allocate finances from other areas as well. You know, that's the great thing about Disney, is that if they wanted to, they could have other things in Star Wars help pay for that, the creation of that series. But sure. I think we're going to have something where we're probably going to be following the crew of some sort of ship. And their ship is going to, you know, much like the Ghost of the Millennium Falcon, their ship is going to be the primary set piece for, you know, whatever adventures, you know, Starship Enterprise, you know, I'm sorry.
Well, that's a great comparison though. Like Star Trek had no problem paying for a budget for a high end show. And especially Discovery, every episode looks like a movie. It's like the production quality is amazing. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a property that probably has a lot less money than Star Wars. So, and I don't know about a lot less, but I would imagine that Star Wars is more lucrative. Well, and especially now that it's owned by Disney too, like you said.
Right.
Anyway, I think it's time for some closing thoughts.
All right.
So to me, and I know like, This is obviously my own take. Star Wars is just different now. And different change, you know, certain people are really good with change. Some people aren't. I hate change. And we're recording this episode where this will be the last time I record in my little Wampa's Lair room. I'm really bummed. I have to move apartments next weekend. I'm losing my apartment to my landlord's daughter. Like it really sucks. Like I love this apartment. I've loved having my Star Wars room. I am going to have a space in the new place, but it'll be different because it's not really secluded. I'm kind of mourning that, which kind of precipitated wanting to do this as a topic. But a lot is changing in Star Wars, and I hate change. I suck at it. Like I'm just like that in real life. Even when the change is good, like I started a new job this summer, that was a very healthy and exciting change, but it took a little getting used to. And Star Wars is something I love more than anything in life, except for my faith and spirituality. It's like, that's the only thing it comes below. And I hold Star Wars, I know, in a very different light than a lot of Star Wars fans. And I'm not saying that makes it better or worse. It's just different. And I know that in some ways, it sets me apart, not above, just apart. And I really cherish and value Star Wars. And I think, I don't know. I mean, I see just so much happening in such a short amount of time that it just, I don't know, it just saddens me. And I'm certainly, I think, still mourning the loss of George Lucas, who I understand is not perfect, right? Like, the prequels were far from perfect. Like, as much as I enjoyed them, they were far from perfect. Except for Phantom Menace. That's pretty much perfect. I love it. I love that movie. You know, and while I understand that he's not perfect, like, I miss it. I think things are a little different now. And again, I'm not a fan of Disney. I kind of never have been. And I have lots of reasons for that, probably none of which need to be brought up right now. It just worries me that Star Wars is being so overproduced. And, you know, I appreciated your point there, Jason, about how, like, Disney wants to see it in the news constantly. But I remember when Star Wars was something a little bit more private. And I'm not trying to say that, like, I think this is also indicative of the change in geek culture, right? Like, geek culture used to be something very kind of quiet and private, whereas now we live in a culture where that's welcomed and celebrated. And that's certainly a good thing. But I think there's just times when I miss kind of the uniqueness of being a big Star Wars fan. Take that however you want. I cherish Star Wars so much, and I want it to continue to be cherished. And I know that all the right people are saying that it will be, but I know that a lot of the people guiding the ship also see it as a lucrative form of making money. And I know at the end of the day, that's what, like, any form of entertainment is, right? Like, entertainment is created to make money. But to me, Star Wars isn't just entertainment, it's art. Art is not necessarily created to make money. I hold Star Wars to a different standard than other entertainment. Like, as much as I love Stranger Things, I will never have a Stranger Things themed room. Like, as much as I love Game of Thrones, I will never have a Game of Thrones themed room. There's just something about Star Wars that's really special. And I don't think that Disney is, like, crapping all over the name of Star Wars by any means. I just think they're giving us so much content, which the positive is they're really enriching the universe, which I appreciate, but I'm really mourning the fact that they're taking away our ability to digest things more slowly. And I think that's it. Like, I mean, I've made this point in past episodes, but I really think that's a huge part of Star Wars. And I know that I have other friends in my camp on that. You know, I know there are other fans who are saying this is too much too soon. And I know that there's a lot of people who will never see that. Like, again, there's a lot of people who are just excited. I want more Star Wars. Anything you give me, I will eat it up. But I think it can be overwhelming. And we're getting dangerously close to that point. And that's why I made, like, such a bold statement, even though I'm a creator of a Star Wars podcast. But the bold statement of, like, when they start making movies I don't care about, I will not see them. And I will not talk about them on a podcast because there is such a thing as too much. And I don't know, like, it's almost hard for me to put into words how much I love Star Wars. I don't think it should be that hard to know considering we've been doing a podcast on it for 6 years. but, you know, something that has rubbed me a little bit the wrong way and is some of the negative reaction people have to my camp of too much too soon or too much already, where people are saying you're not a good Star Wars fan anymore because you don't like all of these things. I resent that. Don't ever tell me I'm not a good Star Wars fan because I'm not excited about a new movie every year. That doesn't make me a bad Star Wars fan. I think, and I know this is going to sound a little arrogant, but I think it makes me a better Star Wars fan because I cherish what's there and I really want to digest the good that is there before moving on to the next thing. And I feel like Star Wars is going in this direction of just becoming a commercial success constantly, rather than a cultural success. And I think that's going to be to the detriment of Star Wars.
Okay. I totally agree with your point of people should not label your camp in that regard as not Star Wars fans. That's wrong. It's very wrong. And the Star Wars community does more damage to itself than anybody outside of it. Star Wars community really needs to shape up in that regard. You know, the divide between the OT and the PT needs to stop. The divide between the original saga and the Disney, the new Disney, parts of Star Wars needs to stop. The animosity and the tearing each other apart over all of this stuff needs to just shut up. The legends and the canon, just stop it. Star Wars needs to be welcoming. And the fans are the ones who have to be the one to do that. And if you're going to start, gatekeeping or, tearing people down on social media or on the forums or wherever, that's when you're doing it wrong. When you're telling other people that they're not doing it right, that's when you do it wrong. And Star Wars fans need to be more open, more welcoming, and more accepting, because at the same time, while the universe is getting broader and there's more stuff coming out, the idea and the perception of a Star Wars fan is also broadening. And we can't have people standing at the gate saying, no, you can't come in just because you haven't, read this book or seen this movie, that sort of thing. And, or if you like someone, this character, that needs to stop. And so if you think people like Carl who say too much too soon, if you're telling them they're doing it wrong, I'm going to be the first one to get in your face and tell you to sit down and shut up. But I'm coming at it from the other perspective.
Oh, I know.
I am super excited about all the Star Wars coming out. And the thing is there's so much Star Wars coming out that I get to pick and choose. I get to go, ooh, I like this one and I like that one. But that's the way I am with collecting. Mm-hmm. It's the way I approach a lot of this stuff is I like, ooh, I like this figure and I like that figure and I like, and so I'm getting to do that with my Star Wars. And I've kind of already approached that with Star Wars anyways, especially when it came to the novels and the comics and that sort of thing. And so when we get that kind of with the, all the new media and content coming out now, I'm like, ooh. So I get to really focus in on what I really like about Star Wars, and that's, the Jedi and the Force and that sort of thing, and kind of the action adventure of it all. And so that's something that excites me. And while I understand, Carl, your position about, needing time to digest, I get that because we haven't had the time to digest, Force Awakens and Rogue One the way I would like. I'm also super excited for what we've got coming down the pipe. And, it helps influence and contextualize Force Awakens and Rogue One mm-hmm. in a way that I would have had to wait even longer for. So while they may have already had those story beats in place and they want, I'm getting that faster. And it can contextualize and fit the overarching themes of Force Awakens and Rogue One into the greater saga as a whole faster, mm-hmm. which is something I'm also excited for. I love connecting all the dots and, my brain and Star Wars is like one of those crime rooms with all the strings across all the pictures and the reports and all that stuff. Honestly, that's my brain on Star Wars. And I'm a fan of Disney in general. I grew up watching Disney movies. So the idea and the culture of Disney that they try and create, yes, they are a corporation. Yes, they are in the business of making money through their entertainment, through their licensing of products, through their theme parks. But they also are a corporation that focuses on high quality stuff as well. So, and I have faith in the way that they're handling Star Wars, because creative control is still with Lucasfilm. It's still with the right people. Mm-hmm. Disney, they're the marketing machine. They're the money machine. They're the people that are going to sell Star Wars to everyone else who isn't us. And I think, Carl, to your point about, you know, Star Wars being private, you know, a more private thing, the uniqueness of people like you and me who talk about Star Wars and enjoy Star Wars on the level that we do will never change. The uniqueness of that won't change, because the Star Wars fandom is going to turn into a pyramid very quickly. And it'll probably be something where it's a gigantic base, and then it goes up a little bit, and then it cuts across, and then you have a little spire standing on top. and we're in that spire as far as people that – the way that we consume Star Wars and enjoy Star Wars and love Star Wars.
So we're the Jedi Temple. I like it.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. It's like the Jedi Temple. And that huge base that those spires stand on is going to get broader and bigger, and that's where Disney is aiming their marketing for. And that's where they're aiming – all of this push of getting Star Wars news and product and films and TV out. They're aiming them at that group. So the uniqueness of people like you and me will never change. So I think, you know, for people like us who have Star Wars as such a big part of our identity, I want to put out a reassuring word that that's not going to be taken from you. We're not going to get lost in the wash and, you know, lost in the milieu of stuff out there. So I just want to send out a word of reassurance that I don't think that's going to happen. I think the people that we will meet in, you know, work or school or on the street who will be able to carry on a little bit of a Star Wars conversation with us will grow, which is exciting. Because I always like being the Star Wars guy that everyone wants to come and talk to about Star Wars. And so if I can have all my coworkers going, hey, what do you think about this? And hey, can you answer this question for me? Rather than just like one or two. That's exciting to me. Mm. So this whole new era of Star Wars, it is different. It's very different than what we had with George. It's a little less individualized as far as the impact that we have as a fan community on the product itself, but there's also people that came up through the fan community that are now in places to influence and create the stories and create the narratives that Star Wars is putting out now. Mm-hmm. And so while our relationship as far as the influence or the impact that we might have might change, because Star Wars didn't used to be made at such a breakneck speed. And by the time we find out about things, it's already beyond our ability to influence it. They're still listening to us, and things are still getting thrown out to the fans. Change is good in a sense that things will not get stale, but change is never easy. And as a, you know, for me, while Carl, you hate change, I may not like change, but I roll with the punches super easy. Like I'm always easily, sometimes I roll with the punches too easily and I need to like get propped back up and say, hey, no, don't move on that issue or that thing, but don't just accept that, you know. So I'm super easygoing when it comes to change. I may not necessarily like it, but I'll move on, you know. So I can understand where you're coming from to some extent, but it's also very easy for me to just say, kind of accept and say, okay, let's take this in, let's see what happens with it. So you've got great points and a very legitimate point of view. And so do I. And I think it's great that yet again, you and I cover the spectrum. You know, it's not. And that's why I like our podcast, because we cover the spectrum and we have the ability to talk about it with each other. So,
yeah, no, like, and obviously I'm not trying to change anyone's mind.
Right.
In the same way that I know you're not going to try to change mine. To be fair, I do sometimes wonder where my sense of optimism in this regard has gone. Because like you, I mean, I always used to be super excited anytime a new Star Wars thing was coming. I think the only dramatic change is just how often it's coming. And I know for a lot of people that is a reason to be excited, right? Like, it's so great. I don't have to wait every 3 years and then another 10-year break. And then, right, like,
right.
Like, there's always something big and new and exciting coming. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's mostly just the movies that bother me the most. That's the thing. Like, I wish there weren't so many movies. Like, I don't need a Star Wars movie every year. I really don't, as much as I love it. Like, you know, sink your teeth, Disney, into some, like, really great TV content, which I know they can do. Well, hopefully. Rebels has really fallen flat. I haven't seen the finale yet. Well, wait, it comes on tonight. We're recording on Monday. We're recording early this week, but...
Yeah.
By the time you've seen this, we'll probably have seen it. But yeah, I mean, like, Rebels has kind of fallen flat, which kind of bums me out. And yet, Kanan is still one of my favorite Star Wars characters of all time. And, you know, Chirrut is one of my favorite Star Wars characters of all time. So, like,
yes.
Disney is definitely doing what Star Wars ought to be doing in all the right ways, right? So I'm not faulting them on that. I think they certainly have surrounded themselves with creative people, with right, lots of bold decisions. But, you know, I'm of the opinion we just don't need a new movie every year. Doesn't matter what I think. They're going to do what they want. I also know that I'm in the minority in the Star Wars fan community for not wanting a movie every year. Because I know that at least my sense is the general fandom I've heard from is excited that there's a new movie every year. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe what we should do, Carl, is we should in the future back off of our consumption a little bit of all of the pre-hype, you know, all the hype around the trailers, all the hype around ooh, new images or ooh, new information sort of thing. Because one of the differences that we've gotten with Disney is that comes out earlier and more often.
Right.
And so maybe we look at, you know, only hitting the big things.
Right.
That way we can go back and digest Rogue One or Force Awakens or more Phantom Menace, you know, all over again. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'll say this, that it's social media doesn't often help things.
No.
So, no, yeah, doesn't. I've thought for a long time now of just giving up on social media because at the end of the day, it usually pisses me off more than anything else. And beyond just the world of Star Wars, even like obviously politics always plays a big role. I think that's something to be said though there too. That's a good point. Like obviously while Star Wars is changing, we also live in a much different world than even 2005, right? When Revenge of the Sith came out. Like there was the internet for sure. I mean, there were things out there, but it's so different now. I mean, Twitter didn't exist in 2005. At least I don't think it did.
No.
I know I didn't even have Facebook in 2005. I know it existed, but it was still relatively new.
Right.
You know, so
I think it's back when you had to have a .edu email address to use it, you know, cause it was originally just used for like
colleges. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's just different times.
It is.
And I think
you hit the nail on the head is that the biggest difference now is the social media.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, as long as Star Wars continues to inform us in a good way, if their stories still do that, that'll be what matters.
Yes.
Right. I hope that continues to happen. because, you know, I was thinking about how I loved getting to be on My Star Wars Story with Scott Rifen, which I recorded like 2 years ago, but I think it came out in January of this year.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since Scott has gotten one up again, sadly. I mean, I'm not faulting Scott. I know he's very busy and it's a great program.
Right.
But you're right. Scott's famous last question on that show is, where is your Star Wars story now? You know, and like, what do you want to do with it now? And I remember this was like a couple of years ago now, but I said, you know, I want to like continue to spread my love for Star Wars so that other people can love it and cherish it as deeply as I do. And in a way, that's a, to use religious language, it's kind of an evangelical stance, right? Like I want
right.
to, and to your point, which I appreciate is, you know, Disney in a way is broadening the Star Wars community. And like you said, it makes people like us and probably a lot of the folks that listen to the show as well. It makes you more of an authority figure, not in like a powerful way, but more of like people can be like, hey, you know, like, hey, Joey, you're the local Star Wars guy. Hey, Jason, you're the local Star Wars guy. Hey, you know, Betty Sue, she's from the South, I guess. you're the local Star Wars guru. Tell us, you know, unpack this for us. And I think that's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
I guess at the end of the day, my just like, and maybe in some ways it's unfounded, but I just worry that Star Wars is just becoming a marketing machine as opposed to a story machine. And I think the evidence isn't there to say that right now. I don't think I could back that up with hard facts right now, but time will tell. And I'm just worried that it goes that way. And I'm not saying it is, but this constant need for new product, both on the shelves in stores, as well as on the movie screens, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way. Because as much as I think the fools will say George Lucas created things to sell toys, which is complete BS. Sometimes I worry that Disney creates things to sell other products.
They are the masters at cross promoting.
They are indeed.
Grant them that.
You can't fault that.
Nope.
But hey, I think we've rambled long enough. Like Jason said, so next week this weekend I'm moving into a new apartment. It's going to take a little bit to get set up over there. So, Jason has some, you know, great content from the panel you did. Was it Phoenix Comic Con, right?
Tucson.
That is right. Okay. Where you and Joey and Kyle led a panel on The Last Jedi. Isn't that right?
Yes, it is. And our panel, unfortunately, you know, was done the weekend before the big announcement about the new trilogy. So we'll talk a little bit about the Han Solo, but primarily just about The Last Jedi. So, that's, we had a lot of fun with that panel. It was very well attended. I'll give you more information on that next week, when I get that all put together. So, look forward to that next week. We are going to give you our new poll. Just so you can be thinking about it, but we will save the results for that until next time Carl and I are together. And the poll that we've got, we're going to head back to the series we've got going on right now. What is your favorite musical moment from Revenge of the Sith? So not necessarily musical piece, but your favorite moment specifically, that musically just gets you every time.
Yeah, like think
whether excitement or whatever.
Yeah, think Padme's ruminations. What? Who said that?
Carl, you're giving it away already.
Just giving me away, which exactly. Isn't really giving much away.
No, that's true.
But Carl, no, real quick though, before the social media plugs. Yes. First off, I do want to be clear. Like, obviously, I love Star Wars. You know, and right. I've been very critical of a lot of things lately, and I completely get that. And I hope, if nothing else, that you don't take my critiques to ever be a critique of your fandom, both you, Jason, or anyone else in that camp who is loving everything right now. If anything, in a small way, I kind of envy that. I wish I had that excited optimism, and I am a little wary as to where it went. I guess I need some time with my Star Wars counselor, Greg Cass.
Go snuggle your porg.
Yes.
And sit on his couch.
Yeah. Tell him all my feelings. But that being said, I mean, I And I would say this is true of any Star Wars fan who's very critical. Even again, in some, even in a way, to like those old fans that, you know, really resented Phantom Menace. While sometimes, you know, you can level critiques and be negative about something, that doesn't necessarily mean that you hate that particular thing. In some ways, it means you just really love it and you're struggling as it changes. And I know that, like, for me in my own Star Wars journey right now, that's kind of what it is I love Star Wars so passionately, but for some reason I'm struggling a bit with these changes. And I know that there's others out there like that. You know, I in no way intend to critique anyone who, if you think all this new stuff is great, good. Like, I have no problem. I don't think that you're wrong in that. I'm just voicing a different opinion of, be open to some people being reluctant.
Right. We're gonna drag them kicking and screaming into the goodness that's coming out.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you know, so
and they will like it once they're there, but it's the getting there that's the problem.
right. Yeah, I mean, when we are back I can't wait to hear the panel that you guys did at Tucson Comic Con next week, but when you and I are back the following week, we're gonna sink our teeth into good old Wampa's Lair type stuff and just sink our teeth into Star Wars lore and do what we do best, Jason.
Yes.
And I'm very excited because on Wednesday night, which is actually the night before we'll release this episode, but the night before we release this episode, I'll have given a presentation at the new college I'm working at called Journey of a Jedi. And it's essentially looking at where did Luke's journey begin and where did it culminate in Return of the Jedi and anticipation for where it'll be in Last Jedi. And it obviously I'm doing this 1 month before Last Jedi premieres, so I'm very excited.
Oh, there you go. You're doing your own bit of marketing for the new movie.
Yes, indeed I am. They should give me a cut.
They should.
I'll take 0.5%, I mean, which would still be thousands of dollars, I'm sure.
Right. I'll take 0.25%.
Right.
And just, I'll be set for life.
And just put, in the special thanks, put my name in there, the Wampa's Lair.
Right, exactly. Yeah, just put us in there. We'll do some promoting for you. It'll be great.
It'll be awesome.
Like, we don't already promote Star Wars enough. All right. Well, Carl, if people want to weigh in on any of this great discussion we had or weigh in on our poll, where can they do that?
Well, they can do it over on Facebook. Facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter at WampasLair. You can always email us at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the show and get some more bonus content, head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/WampasLairPodcast. And just again, as another reminder, if you would like to win a free pack of Topps Journey to the Last Jedi trading cards, all you got to do is log into the iTunes store and write us a review. That's all. That's all you got to do. Just write us a little review. Say, Jason's great, Carl's a jerk. 5 stars. I don't care. Just head on over, sign that up, and we'll send you a free pack.
I would care because I don't think Carl's a jerk at all.
Thanks, Jason. I don't either.
Well, I would hope you wouldn't think you're a jerk. All right. Well, you got anything else, Carl?
No, I'm all set.
All right. Well, I think we've talked ourselves out of this episode. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, episode number 256, Can't Stop the Change. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here